Lecture 12. Where did the wisdom of Jesus come from? In the story of Jesus. Where did the wisdom of Jesus come from? Now, we all know the answer, don't we? The wisdom of Jesus came direct from the inner source. Now, in your life, each of us in our life, in your life, in my life, every single moment of my life is inscribed in a book. Everything I'm going to do is inscribed in a book. Every single thing that I'm going to do is inscribed in a book. And the book is in me. And I can just feel your trembling heart saying, "Now, now, destiny, destiny, is that what we're talking about?" Every possibility that I might even entertain is in this book. Everything that ever existed, ever will exist, ever could exist, ever could happen, ever did happen, ever would happen, is in this book. You understand? It's in that book already. Now, I have the privilege of taking any aspect of the book and applying it to my life at any time I choose. I have the privilege of applying to my life that I am the Queen of England. Herb, you the Queen of England? Yes. I can instantly place myself in the consciousness of the Queen of England and be the Queen of England if I choose to be that. That sounds irrational, doesn't it? It's outrageous and stupid. Well, I can be the President of the United States right at this moment, regardless of what experience I am right now or who I am right now. If I choose to be the President of the United States, instantly I am so. And I am living as the President and doing the things the President does, from my point of view. The President as I would be expressing him. Not the President as the President is expressing today. Not whoever it may be, but me. Now, if I choose to, I can be a great operatic singer. I can be an ordinary peasant living in the countryside, having a small little cottage where I have my picket fence around it and the garden inside of it, and I have my sheep bleeding in the fields nearby, and I am just content and peaceful and happy being this soul. If I choose, I can be on the moon. If I choose, I can be the moon. If I choose, I can be the earth. I can be a flower, a plant, a tree, a bird. I can be anything I choose to be, because all that exists, all that ever did, will, can be, does exist, does now exist in my book of life, because it is eternal, it is immortal, it is omniscient, omnipresent, and omnipotent. It is the allness. Now, I have the same book in me that you have in you, and each of us has. It's exactly the same book with exactly the same information, exactly the same possibilities, and yet you, silly person, you choose the things you have chosen. And I, from your point of view, am a silly person, and have chosen the things that I have chosen to do. Now, would you like to be Jesus? Would you like to be that person, Jesus, who is going around being such a beautiful expression of the divinity? Would you like to be that? Or would you like to be Moses? Would you like to be Lily Hunziker? You know? Would you like to be Edith? Edith, would you like to be Edith? Yeah, that's why she's Edith. She chooses to be Edith. Now, what about the rest of you? Do you choose to be who you are? Yeah. Or would you like to, at night, when you're asleep, and when your consciousness on this plane is laid down, play another role? And you do. And you might play the role of, the chairman of the CIA, you know, or the, as Edith might like to do, where she is the chief honcho for all security divisions of activities throughout Switzerland. You know, She's the chief chief cheese for doing all the activities that they do, whatever they may do. And she is so busy. She has 300 million thousand obvious things that she must do every minute, and then she has 300 million thousand other things that she does every other minute. But being the genius and being that she has placed herself in that position, she has lieutenants that she places in charge of all these things, and the only thing that she involves herself with, listen to them, the only thing that she involves herself are things that are give her fun and are enjoyable to do. She does not involve herself with anything that's a headache. If something comes along that is a little bit undesirable, she turns it over to one of her henchmen, I mean one of her lieutenants. And the lieutenant takes care of the details and takes care of all, follows the rules of the security department, and all she does is just sit up there and collect her salary and have fun. Sound good? Travel the world and be aware of all these secret things, you know. I think she likes to be aware of secret things. And it's kind of fun. And she knows everything. And if anybody were to ever come and kidnap her and try to force her to give the codes and the secret data and things like that that she knows, you know what she'd do? She would disappear. She would absolutely disappear, and they would have nothing in their hands. And if they were trying to force her to do something, and she wanted to play a game, she'd turn herself into a mouse. And they'd say, "What's this rat doing here?" You know, and or then she'd change herself into a fly on the wall, and then she'd be watching them and seeing what they're doing, and she'd see all the nonsense that they do and all the bad things that they do, and then she would get on her little secret phone that's inside her ear, and she would tap on it, and her henchmen would come to her rescue, not her rescue, but they would come and pick up these bad people, and she would tell them exactly what they're doing, where they're doing it, and why they're doing it, because she's just having a ball. She's just being a fly on the wall. And after all is said and done, and all of the bad men are out of the way, she just reforms herself into her natural self, and then walks out, and they say, "How did you get in here? What did you do? Wow, you know." And she said, "The things you don't know won't hurt you." But you see, could she do that?
Yes.
And would she do that?
Yes. Yeah.
In fact, yeah, she would probably hire me as her imagination person for things that she didn't think about, I might think about. But you see, this is the beautiful thing about us and the beautiful thing about Jesus. Jesus was not limited to one life, one time, one experience alone. He was all time, all life, and all experience. And he was on all planes, Engeborg! He was on all places having a ball and listening. Lift your head up so that your eyes stay open. And he was on all planes having a ball, and he was just doing all sorts of great things. And you know what he did? Jesus, at one point in his life, decided that he was going to be Ingeborg Pückert. And then he looked at Ingeborg Pückert's life and he says, she doesn't have enough excitement in her life. She has enough things that cause her to just blank out and just not be interested in life. So Jesus said, I'm going to give myself as Ingeborg Pückert a few perks. So what does Jesus as Ingeborg Pückert do? He goes to the beauty shop, and she gets a beautiful new hairdo, a fabulous new hairdo with all dark color, and so she looks just like she's a sweet 16er again, you know, which she is. And then she goes into the boxing group, and they give her a couple shots in her face, and all of the muscles, all the things on her face are relaxed, and all the wrinkles are gone. She looks just like a baby's bottom, you know. And then they say to her, Ingeborg, would you like this for your whole body too? And she says, sure, why not? So her bust tightened up into a nice little small bust, and she has everything in perfect place, and her body is just absolutely fabulous, you know. You see, this is Jesus as Ingeborg Pückert. Jesus isn't going to fool around with any body that's not A1 shape. You know, he takes it to the mechanic shop and has it shaped up. And so Ingeborg's feet, toes and nose and everything, and all of her joints are in perfect shape. And he gives her a complete lube job, you know. Everything is in perfect shape. All her lymph glands and all her blood vessels and all her arteries and veins and capillaries. And she's just operating at 100% like she's just new, fresh from the factory. Well, Jesus doesn't fool around with a body that is not good. Would you? Would you?
No.
I mean, if you knew the program, would you fool around with something less?
No.
Well, now, you know the program, but you're still fooling around with something less. Well, now, that's what Jesus would do with if he took over Ingeborg Pucker's body. And, of course, he wouldn't take over Ingeborg Pucker's body. He would be himself. Mm-hmm. But he would have that as his sample, and it wasn't the sample he wanted. He would upgrade it on many levels. Now, Ingeborg, would you upgrade your body on many levels if you had the opportunity?
Yes.
Yes. And how old would you be?
But it's not as if the age accounts.
Thank you, Ingeborg, for your cooperation in working with me on this program that I'm working here. Ingeborg, how old would you be? I would be a young person. I would be dynamic. I'd be forceful. I'd be ready for the ball. I would be sweet 16, ready to be kissed. Never been kissed yet, you know. I would be all set to go out and set the world on fire with all of my beauty and my dynamicism and all the magic of my being. Because, hey, I've had a talk with Jesus, and he says, I have been blowing it. I've just not been getting the most out of my body here, not the best mileage. And so now is the time to do it, right?
Yes.
Okay, well, get with it. But Ingeborg, in 30 years now, I have told you every single time, play the game with me while I'm playing it, because otherwise you mess up my role, you know. You mess up my,
program.
Huh? My program, yeah. Thank you. See, you know. So play along. And it's much more fun that way, too, I assure you.
Yeah.
Okay, now, where did Jesus get his knowledge? He went right to this universal book within him, which we all have within us. And in this universal book is all knowledge, all about Ingeborg Pucherit, all about Ellen Cheremini, all about Herbie, you know, all knowledge. And he can have access to any piece of information he wants, if he wants it. He doesn't have to ask anybody, because it's all right there, right clear and good. The allness of the universe, the allness of knowledge, the allness of everything. And so when he was giving his Sermon on the Mount, and he was giving these little soliloquies, he was doing just beautifully because he tuned in to the people he was talking to, and he tuned in to the manner in which he wanted to present it. He is pure love, right?
Yes.
Therefore, he taught as through, in, and about pure love. And then he listened to the people, and he heard what their needs were, how some of them had disagreements with one another over one thing or another. And he spoke to those things. He spoke about the seed. He spoke about the farmer. He spoke about the use of the money, how some money is left to some of the people and other people are given less and some are given more, and why and how. And he made it not that any one of them were bad. See, even the people who didn't invest the money that the housekeeper gave to them to take care of, even though he didn't make them look bad or anything, he made the one who did the most confidence, had the most confidence in himself, he made him super looking, and that's good. And the others were okay. But you understand? You never have to tell a story to belittle somebody to build up somebody else. All you have to do is tell the story of how wonderful somebody else is, and that stands on its own feet, and you don't have to belittle anyone. This is why Jesus was a master storyteller. I mean, you think I'm good. Jesus was 100 times better. He just drew right from that inner source of all knowledge.
Yeah, you know.
And he revealed all that information perfectly to his listener. And his listener sat spellbound as he spoke to them and was delighted and charmed by everything he said, because he listened to his audience. He listened to the people he spoke with. He listened to them and knew. And when he went to Mary and Martha, who were having trouble with Lazarus, kicking off, he said, "Now don't shake yourself up about this. Now he's only sleeping." But Jesus, if he was only sleeping and he had such trouble, why did you wait 4 days before you came over here? Well, that's the thing that Lazarus and I got going between us. Because Lazarus knows that if I woke him right away, people just say, "Well, he was only sleeping." But if I left him 4 days in the tomb and he was starting to rot a little bit and then brought him back, people would say, "Hey, Jesus, he's cool, you know." And did he bring Lazarus back or did Lazarus come back? Was Lazarus always alert, always awake, always ready? Do you know what gangrene is? Gangrene is when your body is not functioning properly and the blood vessels are not servicing the muscles and flesh around it, and then the atrophy, not atrophy, but they rot. And as they rot, it has to be cut off so it doesn't affect the rest of the body. Well, gangrene was the type of thing that was setting in with Lazarus. This is a common thing that happens when death takes place. Gangrene immediately sets in. Because the body rots, it has no blood servicing it. So when Jesus woke him, what did Lazarus do? He shook his hands and shook his feet, you know, and shake it all about. And he brought back the vibrations to his body. He brought back the movement of blood through his cells in his body. And they all freshened up again, you know. That's what happens. And do you think he did that? He surely did. Now, we have the answers to all these things. If you want to ask any question at all, just ask it. I'm not in the mood to answering your questions, but I'm in the mood to telling you the answers that I think about. So, listen closely. This is what Jesus did. Where did he get his knowledge? He listened within. When I say read the book within, what am I saying to you? I am saying to you, be one with as that book. Listen to the book. Hear the book. See the book. Know the book. Read the book. Let it be one as you. It is your manual. It is your manual of operation for your body on this human plane. Now, on other planes, you have other manuals in you. Every body you have, and you have many bodies, every body you have has its own manual. And this manual is somewhat different insofar as the body is different, insofar as the environment is different, insofar as the emphasis you have placed on it is a little different. And this is what Jesus used, this is what you use, this is what I use. Scientists are telling us this all the time. Now, what is a PDF file? A PDF file is a large book that has been placed into a very small amount of space, you might say, and available to you in a blown-up, filled-out space whenever you choose to do it. And you can have part of it or all of it. So you want to read, well, I'm 18 now, so you pull up the chapter on 18 and what it all entails and what it all is about. And then you can read it, or be it, or see it, or have it be a video in your life, in your mind, in your thought. And that's kind of nice. You know, it's kind of nice. But I am not kidding you. This is what it is. And you have been using it a little bit, but not very much. And you have not been using it consciously. And when Ingeborg starts using it consciously, she will start seeing that the blood is flowing through her fingers, through her veins, through her arteries, through her capillaries, through every part of her body. And every inch of her body is just vibrating with zest and vitality, vibrating with power and energy, vibrating with purity and wholeness, and so fantastic. And when she takes her fingers now and she grabs a log and pulls it down off the side of a tree because it's broken down, she's going to throw it in her wagon, the strength is there like gargantuan strength, you know? No limit. As it is now, she has virtually no limit, but she limits herself by thinking that she can't do it now because she's turning 19. And so she has to be careful. This is what you say to yourself. These are the silly things you do, but you can do it. Now, then, silly Ingeborg Pukert, you have within you all knowledge. You have within you all wisdom. You have within you all omniscience, omnipotence, and omnipresence. And you can speak your word. The log will just go and be whatever you want to be. But Ingeborg, what do you want? Do you want the log cut up into 2-foot pieces to be used in the fireplace and stacked just outside of the monastery and have a special shelter for it to keep it dry in the winter? Yeah. Do you want it done now? Yeah. And it's done. Now, Ingeborg, if you light the fire in the fireplace in the monastery, do you have to get paper and scraps and matches and stuff? Or you snap your finger and say, glow, little glow worm, glowing, glowing, and your fire just glows beautifully, right?
Yes.
Now, Ingeborg goes around the property here, and she has, I don't think she calls it imperfection. I don't think she looks at the things lying around here and says that they're imperfect. She just looks at them and says, something for me to pick up. And so she bends over and picks it up, bends over and picks it up, bends over and picks it up. She has a terrific back, you know. Now she should do the same thing with her fingers, you know, have terrific fingers. But better yet, just speak your word and say, all of these things are where you want them. This goes in the trash can, this goes by the fireplace, this goes here, that goes there. And then, Ingeborg, the light goes out on the Shangri-La, and you say, burn, and the light burns. You say, burn forever, and the light burns forever. And then you have the responsibility to remodel the Shangri-La to your choice, and so you do it your way. She does it her way. She looks at the one of Ludwig von Beethoven's, no, not Ludwig, King Ludwig's castles in Germany, and one of the more modern ones, you know, with everything all beautiful. And she says, yes, that will do. And so she just merges that one with the Shangri-La presently. And here is this lovely castle, beautiful castle, with a large wall all around it, about 12, 15 feet high, you know, on our north boundary, and giving us all the privacy in the world, and this lovely, beautiful castle. And then she says, come over and see the Shangri-La. And we say, well, what do you mean? And she says, well, just come over and see. And so we all come over to see the Shangri-La, and she says, my room's up there. She says, I have an elevator going up to my room, and I have forced air heating and air conditioning in there. And I have beautiful plumbing with lovely copper piping all throughout. And I have a lovely indoor swimming pool. And I have maids in waiting who take care of my needs over there. And you guys, why are you living in that primitive building that you're in? I cannot understand that. And so she points this out to us. I was looking at the pictures on the video where you can bring them up for free or whatever.
Web shot.
Yeah, the web shots. Mm-hmm. And so, what did I bring up? But several very lovely castles. Very beautiful castles. And I thought, that would make a lovely Shangri-La. What do you think, Ingeborg?
Well, let's start.
Huh?
Let's start.
It's
already done.
No. She said that's a start. She said, and what are we going to have for the other buildings? But you see, wouldn't that be something if at each corner of our property here we had a lovely castle? You know, and high and turreted and all that sort of stuff. And then in the center we had a beautiful, fantastic garden with waterfalls in it and ponds and those fish,
the koi
fish, you know. Wouldn't that be something? And I bet every one of you would love to come and live here and work here and play here and enjoy it. But you see, why not? And you know, Edith, you know, Ellen,
yes.
No building permits.
Uh-huh.
Because you see, it was always there. See, when we snap our finger and it is there, it was always there. There was never a time when it was not there. And we have it so beautiful and so fun. It's just amazing. In fact, we might even extend our boundaries a couple miles this way and that way and just have a, for riding our horses and driving our golf carts and doing all that fun stuff.
But, and having our lake there with our boat.
Yes, and you mean with our yacht?
Yes.
A big enough lake for a yacht.
Well, we have direct access to the ocean.
Anyway. That's great. Without any, what do you call them at the Panama Canal? Without any, you know. Yeah, the things that lower and raise the water. You see, like there, right there. See? Right there. That's it. See, we just go into the ocean and we come back from the ocean and it's always level. Isn't that neat?
Yeah.
And why not? But you see, this is the craziness of the reality. We will not let our minds soar into the possibilities that we can. And Jesus did. Jesus did. When Jesus was talking to the devil, the painters paint him as having the whole universe standing down below him, and the devil saying, if you will follow me and worship me, I will give you all of this. You will be the master of all of it. And what did Jesus say to the devil? Not what the Bible says, but what did Jesus say to the devil?
I already have it.
What's the matter with you, Joe? You know, you're slow on the uptake. What else have you got to offer? And so the devil offers all sorts of things. He says, got that?
Huh?
I got that. Got that already. And you see, what was Jesus saying? He was saying, anything you can do, I've already done. And we can do all these things, except that we have not allowed our imagination to soar and take off with us to do this. Science fiction writers are real close to getting there, because they just let their minds go into these beautiful books that they write. And it's so crazy to write, and it's really fantastic. Now, you can do that too. You can do that too. You can let your imagination soar, but Ingeborg, you got to do it. You got to, instead of saying, ouch, you got to say, wow, you know? Instead of saying, ugh, you say, ah, you know? Get that love moan in there. Oh, it's so wonderful. This is so beautiful. This is so fantastic. Just think of how the campus would be if it were spread out in that manner. Now, somebody might come along here, like one of our neighbors, and say, oh, come on now. You want log cabins. You want log cabins here and there. You don't want big old mansions, big old castles from the type that are in Europe and Scotland and England and things. Hey, I think the castles are kind of fun, personally. And I think that a castle with all the modern-day amenities, carpeted floors, you know, stone everywhere, but carpeted floors with beautiful electrical fixtures, electric outlets every 6 feet, you know, with six-unit outs, and with the latest computers. In fact, computers that are even later than the ones that have just come out, that are more recent than that, because they do exist, you know. And then you just say to Bill Gates, Bill, come on over and visit and do some of your thinking in this think tank up here. We have a special think tank room that has unlimited knowledge in it. You walk in there, and any thought that you think, you immediately have the total solution to carrying that thought out and manifesting it. Wouldn't that be something? Mm. Now, you see, the more I talk, the more I share with you, the more ideas here, and I could, of course, expand on them, but the more ideas are here, pretty soon you say, well, what's left? What's left to do? We're doing everything. And then the answer is, if you're doing everything and you think there's nothing left, you don't realize that you have only begun. You have only touched the very tiniest point of the allness that you have no idea what that allness is all about. Have you let your mind soar recently and had a ball like we've been doing in our lectures here? Have you done that? Have you let your mind move on into some greater, greater, greater dimension? Have you been a Leonardo da Vinci creating the diving bell, and not only creating the diving bell, but creating the motor and creating this and then having some place to put it, you know, going down for something. They don't know what's down there. All they know is they dropped their watch and they thought they'd go down and try to get it. But it's fun. It's fun. And then what would you do? You see, you have all knowledge and you would know about the bends and you would know about proper handling of your body as you go up and down the great depths under the ocean. You know what I'm saying? You would know about that. You would know how to handle these things. You would know these things because that's part of all knowledge. And when you have all knowledge, here you have the diving bell, pressure, the diving bell, air, the diving bell, motor, electric or gas or propane or methane to operate the pump to put air pressure down there, on and on, something to hold it down. And then when you're down there, you want to have a drawing board so you can draw what you see, or you want to maybe use a digital camera and take pictures of what you see, or maybe use a digital video camera to take pictures of what you see. You understand?
Yeah.
Years ago, they thought, you know, motion picture camera with a tape running through it. Then they started to have digital a little bit, and then they put a little bit of digital on, and they have a disc now in the camera, which is like a CD disc, and it'll take several hours of photography. And pretty soon they'll have this little chip in there, a little chip that has more space, more power than, say, 150 DVD or video moving motion pictures. You know, isn't that fantastic? Fantastic. And you can also edit it right there because you have this screen. And you know what the screen does? What the screen does, you press the button for the screen and the screen immediately flashes on the wall and makes up of maybe a full 8 by 10 foot area of the wall with the pictures that you have on the video. From the screen itself, because it flashes up there. You know what they have for computers now? You have a little handheld computer, you know, these little handheld jobs, these palm things. Well, they have a laser keyboard. And it's a little box, and it's connected to your palm held. And then it sends it sends light rays down on the surface of the table, and you can just type on the surface of the table there because there's your keyboard. It's just sent there by the little box. Isn't that fascinating?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine, you don't have to have a keyboard. And then if you want, the next step is for them to do it the other way, is to take the picture and flash it wherever you want. Maybe on the sky at night. Wouldn't that be something?
Mm-hmm.
Have the picture flashed in the sky at night, and you look up there, and there's your and you don't have to blow up the type because it's nice and big. You just have a ball with it. But you see, these are the silly, imaginative things. And I guarantee you, I'm thinking them secondhand because there's a dozen other guys who are thinking them firsthand and working on them in various laboratories and coming up with solutions for them. Do you know? There is an engine, a practical, wonderful engine that would drive a car that uses pure water, only water, only water, and we're worried about our energy situation, we're worried about these things, and maybe we ought to worry about the water. You think we've run out of water? We're doing pretty good on that. But you see, isn't that something? We think about this now, like Edith says, yeah, they got that, yeah, they got that, and she's right. But you see, all of you don't know that they got that, and we don't have it yet, because though they got it, they don't give it. And so we'll just know that they'll be giving it now. But wouldn't that be something? You go home after driving your car and you turn on the hose and stick it in your gas tank and fill it up. And nice. Or even better, you have these little capsules that automatically create water in your tank and fill up your tank for eternity, you know. So you always got it. And of course, you can be sure that with an engine that uses water to burn, so to speak, that it is a pure engine. There's no pollution. You see, the wonder and the magic of knowing that you are all knowledge and that you are one as all knowledge. And where did Jesus get his knowledge? My gosh, he didn't even listen to me. And I have some interesting things. But he's got more interesting things. Where did he get his knowledge? He listened within. Are you ready to listen within and apply yourself to this and come up with some very fantastic things? You can, you know, but why don't you do it? Why don't you do it? Why didn't Jesus' followers do it? Here he was, the master of this craft, and he was teaching his followers these things, and they didn't learn because they didn't have the fire and the drama and the imagination that they could have had, which is required of students like that. What kind of a student do you think Michelangelo was? Do you think he was a mundane student who painted between the lines for the master painters and didn't start thinking, he could have changed his eye a little bit, I'll fix that up, you know. He could have done this a little, you know, and do things like that. And you see, a genius cannot be quelled, cannot be stopped. A genius is always a genius. A genius knows what's going on behind him, in front of him, around him, either side, up and down, down below and up top. He knows everything, not because he's looking, but because he's one as all of his universe, as all of his world. Now, to be one as all of your world takes quite a bit of energy. It takes quite a bit of energy, because to be one as all of the universe, you are, and that doesn't take energy. But to utilize it takes energy, because it's not that taking one item and running with it is a difficult thing. You're like Sylvia. You go into this treasure house and you see all these goodies and you say, wow, 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 where do I start? You know, which pocket is big enough, and how many crowns can I wear on my head as I walk out of here? And you see, as a master, you don't run frightened. You see, and Sylvia or any one of us would be running frightened if we felt we had to grab everything and run, you know. But when you're a master, you know your source, the allness within you, and you don't run from it or to it. You run with it. You take the ideas that turn you on, and then you play with them, and you direct them, and you work with them. And then after that, then you go and get some other ideas, get some other projects, get some other magic, and go and play with it. But it's such fun. And this is what it's all about. It's fun. Now, those people who are tired, those people who run out of energy, those people who run out of the zing to do things, are the people who think they have to do it all at once. In this lifetime, if you want to say lifetime, in this dimension, in this experience that you have, do everything you want to do, but there's no rush. And if you leave anything undone, don't worry, somebody else already did it. You know, but for you, you hadn't done it, but it doesn't matter. But it was for you to play with. Now, I say to Edith, Edith, stand on one finger. And Edith says, oh, come on now. I've got to exercise, I've got to get strength in my finger, I've got to do this, I've got to do that. And I say, Edith, stand on one finger. So she stands on one finger. And she says, hey, that was easy, that is easy. How come it's so easy? And I say, because you're not thinking about it. If you think about it, your finger will collapse. And then it collapses. See? Now, if Edith were really a tiger, so to speak, she would say, oh boy, now I want to stand on this finger, I want to stand on this finger, I want to stand on this finger, I want to stand on my nose, I want to stand on my toes. You see, that's people who are afraid they're going to miss out on something in life. Edith says, I can stand on one finger, I can visualize myself standing on one finger, on any of my fingers, and that's good enough for me. Now, let's go to another project. Oh, you say, what's another project? I'm going to, I'm going to take a thought and make that thought into a thing which is self-perpetuating, which is self-indulging, self-creative, and that one thought can be, we can sell it at the store too if you want, that one thought is anyone who buys it, anyone who takes it, they just pop it in their mouth, and the thought becomes one as them, and whatever that thought is, that's what they are. And if that thought is a pussycat, they become a pussycat. If that thought is a fabulous, beautiful woman, then they become that. If that thought is an archer, they become a great archer. If that thought is a fantastic politician, they become a fantastic politician. Any thought. Now, the thought is not defined. The thought is only designed. It is created. It is accepted as a concept. And all of the stuff that goes with that thought, that makes that thought into an effective thought, you don't have any idea what it is. You don't know what it is. You take that thought, you drink it, eat it, sleep it, and all of a sudden, you are one of the greatest politicians the world has ever known. You are one of the greatest singers the world has ever known. Whatever the thought was about. And you do it instantly. It doesn't take time for you to practice and prepare. If Gertrude were to take a thought capsule, and the thought capsule were that she were an opera diva, you know, that what she would do would be singing in her gospel and sing, and everybody would say, wow, we have a diva among us, you know. And she would sing with such glory and such magnificence. And then her music director there would say, oh, we're going to do this different. We're going to have an opera, and you're going to sing the opera, and we're going to do this. And Gertrude said, well, I don't know that opera. And her teacher says, Gertrude, you don't know anything. You know everything. And so Gertrude said, you're right. So her teacher, you know, who's guiding the music, says, Gertrude, give us a C. Give us an A. Give us a plus minus. Give us this, that, and tuk, 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 perfect pitch. And then she says, all right, Gertrude, we're having a little trouble with the baritone part here. Would you please sing that with the men to help them follow through? And Gertrude says, yes, but let me sing it first. And perfect, perfect. Because whatever she thinks of herself doing, she does, and she does it exquisitely. This is what Jesus did. This is why he was able to speak to the multitudes and be heard. This is why he was able to bring to the people the idea of anything. And who do you think, now you're going to hear other stories, but who do you think gave Jesus the seamless robe that he wore? What? Ellen?
He thought himself.
Yeah. Himself. He gave himself the seamless robe. Why, Dodie, did he give himself the seamless robe?
Because it was the best.
He deserved it?
He deserved it.
He was the best? He deserved it? He was the best? Why didn't he give each one of his disciples a seamless robe? Well, they didn't deserve it. They weren't ready yet. They hadn't passed the test. Why didn't he give his mother a seamless robe? Because his mother was not with him in his philosophy. Why didn't he give Peter a seamless robe, who was supposed to be his follower par excellence, you know? Why didn't he do it to anyone else? He did it for himself. Now, do you think that his disciples knew that he had a seamless robe? Really?
No.
Think about it. Ellen, if a disciple knew he had a seamless robe, what would happen?
That disciple would have won.
Oh, thank you, Ellen. That disciple what? Say it again.
Okay, the consciousness.
Now, just a minute. Ellen was talking here. Go ahead. Sylvia, go ahead.
Okay. If a disciple would be able to recognize the seamless robe, he would have that seamless
also.
Robe too.
What were you going to say, Ellen?
If he would have the consciousness of a seamless robe, he would have it.
Exactly. You're both exceedingly wise. You see, if you have the consciousness of the seamless robe, you have a seamless robe. And the disciples did not yet have that. In fact, nobody in all of Jerusalem, nobody in all of Israel had a seamless robe like that. You ask them to tell you about it. Ask them to say, where else is a seamless robe? And there is none. Now, if each disciple were so nicely advanced in their awareness, recognizing the allness within them of all knowledge, they too would have had a seamless robe, because that would have been a natural. Now, why is it that the Hindus give their students or whatever these, what kind of robes you call them? Their
saffron robe?
Saffron, yeah, that's the word, saffron robe. Why do they give it to them? It's a symbol of a seamless robe. It's a symbol of the seamless robe, is that right? It's a symbol of Jesus' seamless robe?
No, it's a universal concept.
It's a universal concept of a seamless robe. How very interesting. How very interesting, isn't it? You see, the seamless robe that Jesus had was really something. And now all these little Hare Krishna people are running around with their seamless robes. Mm-hmm. I doubt that. They have a saffron type gown, but not the seamless robe. Mm-hmm. Who has the seamless robe? Perhaps the masters. Perhaps because they can see it. And then why do the followers have it or not have it? According to whether they can visualize it and see it. See, we live in a spectacular, marvelous, busy, 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 and fun universe here that's doing just sort of great and wonderful things, and we're having the time of our life. Now, are you aware of all of these things? Are you aware of how much magic is within you? Jesus was aware, and Jesus oftentimes played with himself. He enjoyed the magic in him. He enjoyed the drama within him. He enjoyed these things, and he quietly enjoyed them. And that's why he spent so much time by himself in introspection. He really enjoyed being with himself, because he was a wonderful person to be with. Now, are you a wonderful person to be with? You say, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Okay. Yeah. Are you the allness?
Yes.
Are you the isness?
Yes.
Are you everything?
Yes.
Then tell me how much 1 billion times, 9 billion times divided by 4 plus 3 with a square root of 2 is. Well, the answer is 1.
Right.
Now, you knew that. You're number 1, aren't you? You're fantastic. Now, after this rather simple soliloquy here to our Sleeping Beauty again, what questions do you have for yourself? Anybody, any questions at all? I know I'm so comprehensive and complete that no one would have a question. But just for the fun of it, if you do. If not, fine. Then you can go and take your jacuzzi and swim time now. You're a little early, but just have a ball and do whatever you want to do. Or what else?
No jacuzzi.
What?
Still no jacuzzi.
Why no jacuzzi?
Because she's not working.
Let me show you.